back to the Content That Grows podcast. I'm your host, Nate Turner. And today we're going to be talking about an interesting topic, the idea of kind of being stuck between influencers and reality. So just a lot that we get and hear and see, just advice from influencers, but that's can be very different than the experience of actually being in-house in a role, trying to do the work inside of a company that is always, you know, different from another company. And so joining me today to talk about this is our VP of Content and Strategy, Ryan Sargent. Welcome back, Ryan.
Thanks. Great to be back.
Yeah. So, you know, this is an interesting one. I know it's something you're passionate about and, you know, personally having been in-house as a marketer, understand it as well that a lot of advice comes from a lot of people, you know, LinkedIn, probably the number one, you know, within B2B marketing for sure, but all kinds of, you know, Instagram, TikTok, many different places, X, all of that. So I guess just to start, let's just talk about like the advice, content advice that's coming from influencers on LinkedIn and other social networks and just kind of start from there.
People are pretty good on the internet and on social media at this point, like particularly in this context of figuring out what they can safely ignore completely. Yeah. Like the bro telling you to get up at 4 a.m. and only eat, you know, mushroom coffee for 10 hours a day and not take care of your kids or right. Like that's not what we're talking about here. That's a whole different category of ridiculous. And I'm much more interested in taking really good advice from people that I really respect that I follow and making it useful for day-to-day life and where are the challenges there? Cause it's easy to make, well, it's not easy. I should say it's one of the parts of making a transition to being an influencer full time is removing oneself from the day-to-day work that often the advice is about. And that's not to say there aren't influencers out there who are great at still communicating the value or giving step-by-step tactical instructions. This is not intended as a criticism of influencers in any way. I think that particularly coming from a music background, I support a creator economy. I mean, that's good for my friends in B2B and my friends on stage. So it's more that not every piece of advice comes ready-made and packaged for your situation. And oftentimes you're left to sort through that on your own.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, and that's, you know, so part of what we want to get into today is just like, we'll kind of go into next, like this idea of like just being inundated with this, images of perfection and ideas of kind of like the, you know, best in class that you're kind of striving towards. And ultimately everyone wants that, versus, you know, what your company needs. So we're going to kind of dig into that. And then also going to just kind of make sure we shift into, you know, from our experience, some of the practical ways you can actually deal with this and like move forward so that you feel like you're keeping up and like are trying new things, but you're also, you know, working inside of the company and the boundaries and limitations that you have there as well. So, I think, you know, next, you know, Ryan, if you want to just kind of kick us off on this idea of you're in the trenches, influencers are showing you all these concepts of perfection, but what do you do with this when it is actually like really good advice that you're getting from a lot of these people, but just maybe can't do it all.
Yeah, I think this is like the fundamental problem is that you get these really beautiful examples of what's worked for influencers in the past. What are they promoting as the future of the field? And right in content marketing, that we're in, I think a new era. I think a great time. There's a lot of people out there sharing a lot of great advice. So, and a lot of it is actionable. A lot of it is rooted in experience. You can't do all of these things this quarter. Like that's not reasonable. You certainly can't do them all well this quarter when you haven't done them before. Like to add all of that to your bag that's just not reasonable. And picking and choosing which ones to try first. And then most importantly, balancing done versus perfect. I think that's like, particularly actually as I've moved agency side, balancing done versus perfect is one of the like really fundamental questions about content. And it's something that I've realized we spend a lot of time working towards alignment on. And that's an agency working with an in-house team. You also need to be aligned on that with your internal team at an agency, in-house, wherever. And coming to an agreement about done versus perfect is even more important when you're working with a new strategy that's being promoted by someone who you don't know personally.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think there's a lot there that, that really is kind of coming through on a regular basis. You see the, you know, here's the anatomy of a perfect blog post or whatever. And like, maybe, you know, ultimately everyone's going to have their own opinion on that anyway, or, you know, have some reason to disagree, but, you know, content strategies, quality of content, processes, mix, you know, channel mix, or, you know, distribution, or like all of these different things are constantly there. And like, you know, obviously we have to acknowledge that we are also talking about these things, sometimes, you know, in that same idealistic way, as anyone else. So it's not, like you said, it's not that it's bad advice, because it, you know, can be actionable. It can be based on experience. Like, these are good things. It's just a matter of the, that hard truth of being in house and you don't have the resources to do it all. You don't have, the time, perhaps. You have, you know, things that are just happening in the company. They're challenging and pushing a different direction. So like, yeah, I think there's just a lot there that is difficult to take the good advice and not be able to act on it all. Can be challenging for sure.
An example closely related to the done versus perfect conundrum is content quality. If you ask 10 different influencers for their definition of content quality, you're going to get 10 different answers. Five of the people are going to be really mad about the sixth person's answer. Like, there's so much noise, plenty of signal too, don't get me wrong, but like, that's a topic where there's so many varied opinions. What are you supposed to do? How do you figure out which one of these definitions is most appropriate for you, is going to be find or strike the right balance? And I think that's a really good example of the kind of thing we're talking about. Plenty of influencers there with great things to say about content quality and defining it and measuring it and executing it.
Yeah.
But how do you make that a reality for you next week?
Yep. Totally. Yeah. And I think that, you know, part of it as well, you know, we were discussing before starting this, like, this idea of like, are you building for you or for them, you know, and them being the influencers, or for the business?
Yeah. I mean, hopefully it's more than one, but again, coming from the creative background, I understand the appeal and the draw and the fun of building something that you're passionate about and getting paid to do that. Like, that's awesome. And I think there is some percentage of content marketers for whom that is fundamentally why we are content marketers. And that, that piece of it is important. There's also the build the boring stuff that you know is going to work, that isn't fun. Yeah. This piece is going to rank. We better build it. And then there's building what influencers are suggesting. And those are often in conflict, right? And the SEO piece that, you know is going to rank, middle funnel listicle, this thing's going to drive high intent traffic because it's targeting the right thing. And we know how to execute this. And we have this piece of product differentiation to really call out, et cetera. Plenty of influencers who would say that's not the future. You need to build a different piece of content, something more authentic, something you can distribute in a different way, something that focuses on authority rather than organic search, right? So that's not bad advice. That's not wrong advice. But again, what are you going to do next week? Are you going to build the thing that you know works? Are you going to build the thing that feels most creative and fulfilling? Are you going to build the thing that the influencer suggests?
Yeah.
If you can build one thing and satisfy all three of those, you should probably stop listening to podcasts and go build it. If you can pick two of those, you're doing great and you should pat yourself on the back. But if you have to pick one, you end up in a pickle.
Yeah. And you would say, I mean, it's in most cases that if you have to pick one, it's going to be what the business needs, not what you want, not what the influencers say.
Yeah. I mean, I think for good reason, that is many people's default. the influencer isn't sitting there in a one-on-one asking to see the GA4 numbers, right? Like, yeah. But your boss is. So there's that piece of it to consider. And I think you can do worse than build the thing that most impacts the business. So that's a nice safety net to have. I think as we're going to discuss, there can and should be plenty of room to test new things. It's prioritizing, picking, and getting buy-in for those things that becomes the challenge.
Yep. Yeah. And so one more thing I want to mention before we jump into the practical ways of dealing with this and kind of working through it. The reality is that no matter how much you can actually do from what you're hearing from influencers and folks who are, you know, coming up with good ideas and sharing them, you cannot do it all. And like, so you could have very like polar opposites, you know, where you may have someone who follows influencers who are like, you need to be doing authority content. It's all about your point of view. Like SEO is dead. And they have a boss who's like, we're not spending time on this. It's pretty straightforward. Create content that ranks and drives results. Mm-hmm. And then you may also have someone who, you know, is following folks who are understanding organic, how things are changing, where there's opportunities to create stuff and rank and drive results and very growth focused. And then the CEO is like, why are we writing another, you know, bottom of funnel listicle? We should be talking about our point of view. And you'd literally have like two people almost at like the opposite places, but it's that times so many different permutations of who you're following, the company you're in. And just, it's ultimately that reality that like you, the more you keep seeking that out and trying to like do everything, the more you're just kind of putting yourselves at odds with reality.
Yeah. And I think that example really highlights why we're not making this about any one specific piece of advice, because the proof's in the pudding there. Like both of those strategies are viable. I think a lot of great content teams are doing both at the same time. Yep. You might not have the resources to do both at the same time. All the more reason to have a good handle on prioritization and future steps.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. And one other thing that I think is something interesting I've experienced before is, you know, you can, you know, junior and mid-level employees then can often feel like, oh, if I just had this, if I just had this tool, if I just had a writer, like a dedicated writer, or, you know, whatever it might be, a video person or the subscription. And there's like this looking to outward and then, you know, again, to influencers and like all these things. But I've literally been on calls with, you know, a CEO saying, if I gave you $1 million right now for, you know, your entire content program, what would you do? Yeah. And then that puts it back on the person to be like, well, this is no longer about, I just need this one thing, and really having to kind of think holistically about what are the things that I think would be best. And you maybe start to, you know, pick up two or potentially even three of those, of that list of building for you, building for them, building for the business. But that's also, I think, just an interesting thing of like, if you're listening to this and you do kind of feel like maybe you're kind of caught in that loop of like, oh, I just need this one more thing. Like you may not have, you know, a CMO or a CEO say, if I gave you $1 million, but just ask yourself that question. Like if there was an unlimited budget, you know, what would I do? And you know, what would be the priority and why? And then kind of work from there. So yeah, there's a lot to it, but I think it can be helpful.
The other example of choosing all this stuff is like, no marketer does everything. And my proof of that is that I don't know any B2B SaaS companies that do local radio spots. Mm-hmm. That's a perfectly viable marketing tool. I have made purchases based on local radio spots. That is a marketing channel, but we can't do it all. And that's an easy cut for a B2B SaaS company. Right. So we're just going to find the harder cuts now.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So pivoting, you know, we always want to make sure if we're talking about some topics like this that can be a bit more high level, we want to make sure that it's still coupled with some of the practical advice. So I think, you know, I'll just start it off. Like the number one for me, you know, is just like, ignoring slash unfollowing absolutists. I think that's like, there can, to your point earlier, like there can still be good advice in there. But I think anytime you're getting advice in the context of it's this or nothing, like, or this is the only way, or, you know, kind of veering into charlatan territory of, you know, I know something that you don't, and this is the only way, tends to be pretty healthy to just unfollow it and not even kind of have that influencing you, because it's just at odds with reality.
Yeah. Or if it's couched as a best practice, interrogate it. Say, is this the best practice for my situation, my team, my business? Because you mentioned like the mid-level employee and one more tool. I think a lot of this is aimed at the next level up, this advice we're offering. This is like somebody who has a lot of ownership over setting direction. Mm-hmm. These decisions become even more complex. It's then even, we used a pretty tactical example a second ago, but like if we're thinking about marketing strategy writ large and presenting that upstairs, these problems only get harder. So, best practice. It's easy to say something is a best practice based on a sample size, and you may or may not be part of that sample.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, and yeah, you can even get into very practically, if we're, you know, like narrowing into B2B and B2B SaaS, like, you know, a company that's got a free trial or a PLG motion versus a demo request, you know, and then even within that, you know, a PLG product that's $9 a month versus one that's, you know, $190 a month. And there's all these mechanics that you get into very, very different situations where a best practice, like, to your point, may not really be like a true universal best practice. And then the other one I want to add, and then I'll kind of kick it over to you, is I think it can be helpful to just save stuff. So you come across something, you're like, this is great. And just save it and like do that so that you can kind of stay focused on your plan. But then when you are, you know, if it's next quarter or, you know, plan for the second half of the year or for next year, when you're in that planning mode and you're creating a strategy, then you have some of these things saved to go back and refresh your memory versus kind of feeling like, gosh, I just saw this in my feed. I got to go do this, you know, now, cause it's pressing and I don't want to forget and whatever, but just like, however you bookmark or, you know, use the save tools within, you know, a social network or whatever, like do something to kind of just like bank those. And then when you are in a season of planning, then you can actually come back to those.
Yeah. And I think bank, not backlog. These aren't things you have to do. They're not things that are waiting for your attention. They're in the bank and you're going to make a withdrawal later.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
I'd add, don't listen to the haters. There are people who really enjoy getting in the comments, and those people, that activity is fun for them. It doesn't have to be fun for you. And so there's also influencers. I mean, it's a spectrum, and everyone is incentivized to present things with some form of bias. There's some reason that they're sharing this, and those reasons aren't sinister. Like, that doesn't make any of it wrong, incorrect, bad. It does offer an example of like, everyone's kind of thinking about their own situation when they offer this advice. They can't help it. That's being a human. That, of course, that bias does lead to then people getting in the comments. So don't be afraid to ignore that and really evaluate the idea or the advice being presented up top.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. And then I know kind of just the last piece here, we had, some thoughts around like to actually getting buy-in for new ideas. So obviously a lot of this has been like, hey, don't listen to everything, or like, you know, figure out how to do it, or, you know, plan it out. But like at the end of the day, like you know, my example of maybe a CEO or a CMO kind of pushing for the other direction, like the reality is to try new things or open up new budget or whatever, you're often going to have to work to get buy-in. So Wanted to kind of cover that last piece here on this topic.
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of the pot calling the kettle black, or the what did you use, the one finger pointing out means four fingers pointing in situation, it we would also offer some advice, which is to say, if you're only doubling down on what's working, you're missing an opportunity to test. If you're only testing new things, you're probably not paying enough attention to what's working. I have always found success doing a mix of those things. Getting the exact mix right is easier said than done. Yep. And that means getting buy-in for the testing piece, for the new ideas. How are we developing a proof of concept? Who and when are we presenting it? And for me, a big piece of that is find someone who agrees with you. Don't go it alone. And figure out how they can help. Maybe this is a product owner. Maybe it's a sales leader. It doesn't have to just be your superior. Having that cross-functional buy-in in an in-house environment can go a long way.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I think that there's, you know, another one is like, we have here like ground rules, you know, or requirements. I think that that's always just healthy when you're kind of communicating with execs, is like, you know, what are the requirements? Like, I've seen before, like there's spend limits that, you know, are kind of like, over this is, you know, a bigger experiment or whatever, or there's just like, you have to have these three things. And it's like, a clear understanding of what success looks like. What do we do if it fails? And, you know, something else that like, just really gets some good alignment versus being like, hey, can I try this? You tried it. Because ultimately, there's going to be probably a mix of like, there's not too many things that are just clear as day, absolute, you know, grand slam outcome. It's usually kind of a mixed bag, especially in an early test. And so how you actually, you know, come across that, you don't want to be retroactively justifying it and trying to keep it going or whatever. And so I think the understanding those requirements and ideally coming to them, to leadership with those, I think can also just be a really great thing for buy-in. Typically just anything you're doing, just kind of coming ahead with that.
Yeah. And if you're going to cite an influencer as the source of inspiration, I think be prepared to back that up with results. If it's the influencers or influencers yeah. results, great. If it's results from another company, be prepared to explain why the situation is similar, why you think this will map. And there's some creativity there. It doesn't have to be same ICP. It could be a company that was traditionally getting most of its inbound from this approach, successfully pivoted in this way. I want to run a test case. I want to do this small, and then we can scale later. That's, you know, that's a way to do that. I like to call this the difference between spaghetti and darts, because instead of throwing spaghetti at the wall, we're going to throw a dart at a target. And I have to be able to explain why this is a dart and not spaghetti. And if I can do that in a couple sentences, I'm probably onto something, and I can open the conversation that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great point. And I think the last thing I just want to kind of touch on is like, what are your thoughts on when the company culture like doesn't actually support like what they're not good about, like change and innovation and or are kind of get gun shy and like will kind of pull back and revert to what's known like too quickly inside of a test, like some of those situations that people know all too well from just how companies work, like what are your thoughts there on getting buy-in?
If you know that going in, and you know that the objection often comes up front, why are we doing this at all? Then you can frame it as a very tightly packaged test case. It is truly a test. We are limiting the test in these important ways, time, budget, effort, and make it about, we are doing this one small packaged thing. If that shows results, we will go from there. And I wouldn't even necessarily say where you're going to go. Like, leave leave yourself room to maneuver there. I've also ironically run into the flip side where there's something I want to test and I can't get buy-in to see it through. That in a VC environment in particular, right? The speed piece is like, how fast can we go? How fast can we pivot?
Yep.
It's been 2 weeks. Where's my results? For that, setting expectations up front is also very important in the other direction. I'm going to need this much time and this much resource before this shows a result. A critical mass of deliverables, right? Like we got to plan for all of that as well. So in both cases, the expectation setting is the key moment. And I think this is an individual piece, but I think there's room to set those expectations either as you start to get buy-in or once you have buy-in before starting the project. And we're talking about this as though this is like some huge quarterly initiative. It may be that you just want to try a new type of blog post and you should just go do it. Don't overthink this part either.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, especially if it's like literally a single blog post, if you're able to just pull that off, like, hey, I'm just going to, you know, do this in the, like, I'm not even going to disrupt the plan or try and swap anything out. I'm just going to do it in the evening or on the weekend or whatever. Like, let's just find a way. You're right. There are small things. But yeah. And I think, you know, to those points I would add, certainly on like the companies that may have a tendency to pull the plug early, you know, I think I've cited before that being one of the biggest challenges with companies building, you know, a long-term successful content engine and just like organic growth is, they set their sights, you know, where, you know, oh, well, HubSpot or whatever, where like company that's very mature and has been doing it for a very long time. And when they're not feeling like they're making rapid progress towards that, you know, over a 12 to 18 month period, then they feel the need to kind of like, you know, pivot away from that or whatever. And so I think there's that. And I think just generally, you know, on like supporting, you know, innovation and testing and stuff, like there are a lot of companies that are pretty much purely in like harvesting mode. You know, it's like we're running paid ads to just capture what we can from searches that are happening. We are doing SEO and creating content around that to really capture that. And that's it. And we're not like planting seeds for the future to diversify in any way and be able to do that. And so I think that, being able to round that out, try new things, you know, develop it over time. And then the last thing I would add is just, you know, really, not being afraid to go back to stuff that's been tested before, because if your company's growing, you know, your industry's changing, the way people buy your product is changing, like just because you tested something 12 months ago doesn't mean that it's going to go the same way today. So I think there's some of that stuff too that really need to kind of keep that in mind. And that's why we test, because we don't know the outcome. And we don't want to just blindly do it, you know, never ending, add this to our plate, but, you know, testing it and really just kind of seeing how it goes.
That's a great call out. And I think one that will resonate with content marketers who understand the importance of recycling content, of refreshing content, right? Like refresh the test.
Totally. Yep. Cool. Well, before we wrap up, anything else you want to say on the topic?
No, I think I'd reiterate what I said at the beginning, which is that we're in a great time where there's a lot of free advice being put out, especially for B2B marketers on LinkedIn. And that this is in no way intended to poo-poo that. It's a reminder that that's the first step and that there's more work to be done afterwards.
Agree. All right. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. To check out any prior episodes, be sure to check out 10speed.io/podcast. Please like and subscribe on your platform of choice. Check out the full videos and clips as well on our YouTube channel.